A reading from Luke 9:10-14. When the apostles returned, they reported to Jesus what they had done. Then he took them with him, and they withdrew by themselves to a town called Bethsaida. But the crowds learned about it and followed him. He welcomed them and spoke to them about the kingdom of God and healed those who needed healing. Late in the afternoon, the 12 came to him and said, "Send the crowd away so they can go to the surrounding villages and countryside and find food and lodging, because we are in a remote place here." He replied, "You give them something to eat." They answered, "We have only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, unless we go and buy food for all this crowd." About 5,000 men were there.
Clear to me that there is a conflict going on, conflict of visions here. The followers of Jesus are bound by the natural world. And so in the fact that you're bound by natural perception of all things, your solution to all things are going to be natural. And then Jesus comes in a totally different dimension, adding the improbability of a miracle here that totally confuses them.
Well, that's the whole aspect of Jesus when he sees the world not in its limited view, but more highly from a spiritual perspective of what the possibilities are. In many ways, is constantly stepping on their boxes that they've created for God. This is what God can do. This is what the limit of his ability is. This is how he's done it in the past, so he must do it now. And Jesus is always stretching us to think beyond that. You think of just wild phrases such as, "Say to this mountain to go into the sea and it will be done." He wants us to think of what God can do beyond our best imagination.
Because when you follow the logic of what you're talking about, which has a different foundation to it, God created the heavens and the earth. So the idea of moving a mountain, which seems improbable and impossible to us, well, we're taking out of that thinking the fact that creation happened. The earth is, and the earth was not always, I mean, just the whole configuration of the things we usually define scientifically are actually miraculous in their just existence.
There's also the element of seeing God actively engaged in the world. And for many practical purposes, we're functional deist. We believe that God set this world up kind of like a watch and got it running, and now it runs on its own. And maybe every once in a while he changes the battery, but he's not interrupting. And Jesus recognizes that the Father is willing to put his hand in and to release his kingdom as we join him in faith and partner for that release.
From the very beginning, including in the letters and in the Gospels, when you talk about deism, isn't it just another function of Gnosticism? You know, the human being saying they know how it works. It goes to Job 38, where God calls Job on the carpet and says, "Where were you?" And then he goes on a series of events of, "Where were you when I did this? And where were you when I did that?" And you could, they're unanswerable questions. And the deist is somebody who claims knowledge where no knowledge really exists. It's a very flimsy construct that man creates to explain things.
I guess you could say all ists and all isms are our way of trying to explain the mystery of God interacting away. And when you experience God and come into active relationship with him, those things become rather weak points of discussion, because you begin to see how close God is to the releasing of his bounty and his blessing on our world.
And finally, when the kind of thinking you just described happens, the richness of life comes into full expression, I think. And you see things in a dimension that just doesn't exist on this naturalistic plane.
Life is rather gray tone without mystery.